Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. We are looking at the February 24th edition. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel and Boiler Up Bar, 811 Bistro, and Leaps Coffee. We'll be there next week for a couple of meetings, so we're grateful for them. Today's show, really a special one. We say they're all special, but this is one. Obviously, Brian Newbert will lead us off. We'll be talking Purdue, Rutgers, and of course, looking ahead to tomorrow's matchup against Michigan State. But then also Rick Mount will join us in segment two. And Rick will be part of, we talked to Rick earlier in the week, and always lively and interesting about what the Rocket had to say about not only shooting styles for Fletcher Loyer and coaching choices by Matt Painter, but always interesting to hear what Rick has to say. Then, of course, Dave Schellhouse and Dave, All-American, the class 3 years before Rick Mount, and led the nation in scoring, and of course the bobblehead for the Purdue Minnesota game earlier this month. He joins us as well, talks about his new book as well, a new book about Dave Schellhouse, his autobiography, and a lot more. So we thank you for watching, and Ryan Newbert joins us, and we'll shed some wisdom on Purdue men's basketball and other topics as we get to them today. But for segment one, Brian, you wrote and talked about a pretty near perfect performance in a lot of ways in Purdue. And you know, who would have thought that Purdue would put 96 points up on Rutgers? That was quite stunning to me, and probably and certainly to you. But this is a Purdue had a lot of things go well last night, and you could start with a number of different things. But now that you had a half a night to sleep on it, your takeaways, your thoughts as you looked about writing your upon further review and on down.
Yeah, well, I it's easy to say it was a perfect game because of the final score, but once Purdue cleaned up the turnovers, you know, I think this was as much of a reminder of what Purdue's vulnerability is as the three losses were, because for a while there, Rutgers was getting turnovers, Rutgers was scoring off turnovers, and Purdue had a game on its hands. As soon as that stopped, you saw what happened. Purdue scores 96 points on the number two defense efficiency-wise in college basketball thereafter, and not all of them after the turnovers, but you know what I mean. It really underscored the fact that when Purdue takes care of the ball, and Purdue doesn't make it easier on its opponent to score, this is one of the most difficult teams in college basketball to beat. Prior to tonight, I think this is a really important stat that I've written about a bunch of times here.
Yeah.
The three losses, the opponent averaged 20 points a game off turnovers, off Purdue turnovers. And I really think it is that simple. If Purdue just takes care of the ball, they are going to be really, really hard to beat. And we don't even know what the pathway is to beating them, because it hasn't happened. It's not just the turnovers Purdue denies itself. More importantly, it's the offense it gives its opponents that way. And, you know, that shouldn't be the first thing I mention after Purdue wins by 1,000 points against a borderline NCAA team. I don't think they're going to get in, but I think they're on the far end of the bubble. But 96 points against Rutgers. Rutgers is built to defend, to rebound, you know, and Purdue scores 96. This was, no one could have seen Rutgers giving up this many points to anyone. But Purdue is quite possibly the best offensive team in the country when it doesn't turn the ball over.
Right.
And I think that's really the biggest takeaway from kind of last night's game, even though that might not be the thing that necessarily jumps out to everybody in the wake of a couple of absolutely brilliant individual performances, starting with Zach Edey, Camden Heidi, Braden Smith, on down the line here.
Camden Heidi, obviously 7 for 7 from the field, career high 19, was it, at the end of the day?
18.
18, but it was flawless. But teams look good when the shots go in. But I think that is an interesting comment about just the fact that Purdue was at a point and a half per possession last night. It's hard to get beat if, again, if the Purdue doesn't turn the ball over.
Right.
Yes, it is interesting. Rutgers in the first 10 minutes of that game, or for maybe the first 7 or 8 minutes, looked like a team that was going to not only give Purdue a 40-minute game, but a team that looked like an NCAA level team. And now, after getting, boat raced by 28 points, you're right. The Scarlet Knights are not one of the six teams that look to be in good shape to make the NCAA tournament in the Big Ten. All right, what Braden Smith, as you mentioned, Zach Edey, a lot made of just, again, Edey doesn't even play the last 9 minutes or whatever it was, 7, 8 minutes in that game. But Purdue is now making its free throws also. The last two games has been a turnaround that's been important, especially at home. Going to Michigan Sunday and a team that Purdue should handle with relative ease, it did the first time around. But any correlations between, or how do you view that game based on the heels? I think Ohio State's a much better team than Michigan, but Doug McDaniel will play in that game. But what do you see? Is it still gets back down to Purdue takes care of the ball, it's going to win and win relatively easy. Is that what you see on Sunday?
Well, I don't think anything's ever easy on the road. But like, if Purdue doesn't turn the ball over, Purdue should be fine. And I don't want to say every game they play from here on out, because obviously Illinois is going to be a tough game.
Yes.
But and then, in the NCAA tournament, you don't take anything for granted ever. But if Purdue just takes care of the ball, I think Doug McDaniel adds a little bit of a different complication for Purdue, in the sense that he's one of those quick guards against a team that, isn't always great against dribble penetration. That was not a factor in the first game, obviously, because Doug McDaniel could not travel. He
Yeah.
will play in this game, obviously. But at the same time, Michigan lost Olivier Kamkwa. Is that
Yeah.
what
I think that's
I
how you know.
yeah. That's a big loss for them. I think that this is going to be a different Michigan team in more ways than one. But Purdue is head and shoulders better than them. And, it's kind of one of those deals too, where like there's probably not going to be a lot of fans there. Michigan's got very little to play for here, and you sort of wonder where their head is. But no, Purdue's. I think that Purdue lost to Ohio State, and that happens. People lose games in college basketball, and I think the subsequent freakout, and I'm running the risk here of conflating social media with real life,
Dangerous thing to do.
but I think that everything is so overheated anymore, in terms of the way college basketball is discussed online. I think that. I think Purdue people are a little bit PTSD afflicted. But the Ohio State game didn't change anything. They're the same team they were before. They're one of the best teams in college basketball, if not the best team in college basketball. And I just think that when Purdue doesn't turn the ball over, they're great. And I think that they showed that against Rutgers. And I don't anticipate any of their performances from here on out being anything other than that. Everyone in college basketball loses games. So the Ohio State game was not any sort of existential revelation about what Purdue is or isn't. And I think you'll see at Michigan a team that comes out pretty good and plays pretty well.
You got to remember, Ohio State was a quad one loss. So, I mean, this is a good basketball team.
With good
And
players. Like,
yeah, I
that's
mean,
what people don't understand. It's like Bruce Thornton was a five-star recruit for a reason. Jameson Battle is a proven guy and 20-something years old. I'm trying to think of who else. But it's not like Purdue went and lost to Toledo. or something like that, or played bad. You know, I don't think Purdue has not shown up for a game this year. I don't think they've had an off day. I think they've had spells of turnovers, and that's really it. I don't think we would tend to look at a trip to Michigan right now as, you know, the quote unquote trap game because we have to assign some sort of storyline to every game. But at what point this season has Purdue really fallen into a trap in a quote unquote trap game? They haven't. They have just had games where they have turned the ball over and the opponent has shot really well from three. Those are the two common denominators for beating Purdue. And those would be the two common denominators for beating anyone in college basketball. But everybody loses games. And I think that there's a reason there hasn't been an undefeated team in college basketball in longer than I've been
Also
alive.
before you were born,
Yeah.
before you were born, a year before you were born, right? So
And there
1976.
are plenty of college teams that have NBA lineups, that have the best players in the country all over their roster, that have the best coaches in the country coaching them, who play hard, who take care of the ball, who do everything right and are just dominant college basketball teams. They lose games. It doesn't mean they're not as good as everyone thinks they are. It doesn't mean that they're vulnerable. It doesn't mean anything more than it's a long season. Everybody's playing 30 some games. There are two teams on the floor and stuff happens. So I guess I keep kind of coming back to how much this Rutgers loss or this Rutgers win, you know, kind of disproved or whatever, all the overreaction to the Ohio State game. Because, you know, right afterwards, UConn gets boat raced. I don't know why Purdue UConn is a thing online, but
It is a thing, though. I don't know. That's crazy.
right after Purdue loses a close game, a quad one loss at Ohio State, UConn goes to Creighton and gets boat raced. Illinois goes to Penn State,
Melts down.
completely melts down. Those are the two teams that I guess Purdue is getting compared to, because Illinois is number two in the Big Ten. UConn was number one in the country, whereas Purdue, I think, was number two before Ohio State. And everyone loses. Everyone loses every year, and it doesn't mean anything more than that.
Yeah, I think you look at even last night or on Thursday night, Arizona, who has become, I think it's one thing, it's an interesting narrative, is the flavor of the week. You know, it became UConn has been the flavor of the last couple of weeks. Maybe it's the team that's number one. Houston, Kansas was for a while after they beat Houston. They're good enough to win it all. And now, of course, Arizona loses last night at home to a 21st ranked Washington State team. Arizona was kind of becoming, oh, they're back in it and they're really good. And that's, again, I guess it sells podcast or Zoom viewers, et cetera. I don't know. But that's what we're seeing on a weekly basis is who's in Purdue, maybe number one on Monday if Baylor loses or beats Houston, I suppose, and Purdue will reemerge as the flavor of the week. I mean, is that as simple as that in terms of where this is on a media slash social media landscape?
Yeah, I mean it's just the culture of endless debate online. Who's better than
Yeah.
who? And it's not like any of these teams are different today than they were yesterday. It's not like Purdue just all of a sudden turned into a better team than they were on Sunday at Ohio State. Everyone loses. It doesn't mean that, you know, Purdue and UConn are taking turns being the best teams in the country. They're the same teams they were before the games they lost last week. It's just a matter of everyone loses. But there always has to be some sort of heated discussion going on about things that will get people to click, get people to engage, and things like that. And it's really overheated the way. And I have a lot of opinions on why that is, but I don't want to necessarily take up this whole podcast with me kind of pointing fingers at people in the media or pointing fingers at various platforms or pointing fingers at various fans or various players in the Big Ten, shall we say.
Yeah.
But It is just kind of an ugly landscape right now, and it has killed perspective. When you have done this for 20 years, you understand that, every season comes with its ups and downs. These are volatile commodities in terms of teams made up of young men, and there's going to be some inconsistencies sometimes. There's going to be some ups and downs, but Purdue has had very few ups and downs. People look at Purdue like, oh my God, they lost to Ohio State. They're overrated. They're bound for a collapse. No, that's not accurate. But whatever.
Don't know if we're going to solve that one, but it is going to be an interesting story and be a continuing one throughout the rest of the regular season and conference tournaments. All right, Fletcher Loyer did some good things last night in terms of fives assists. What do you make of he hasn't been he's only hit a couple had a couple of baskets here in the last several games, but. Again, Matt Painter went out of his way, not maybe out of his way, but talked about the contribution Loyer's making. Is that another flashpoint by some Purdue fans over him or whether Miles Coleman should be playing, all of those kinds of things. Just give us your take on that. I know you've also written about that logically and honestly, but what do you see there?
I think Purdue scored 96 points last night against the number two defense in college basketball. I think that at Ohio State, if Purdue just did not turn the ball over 13 times before that last turnover for 22 Ohio State points, Purdue wins that game and Purdue has won its last 11 games. I don't think that there's any sort of element here that's anything more than a manufactured online debate. Fletcher Loyer is not making shots, but he's not getting shots
Yeah, he's not
because
shooting.
he is a marked man for defenses now. And on some level, that probably helps Zach Edey score 25 points on 8 shots, which is
Yeah, crazy.
unbelievable.
Crazy.
That probably helps Camden Heidi get off 7 or 4 open threes, which then leads to his other 3 makes off the dribble. It probably helps Lance Jones get off 5 threes, 3 of which he makes. You don't, and a lot of people won't agree with me here because it's just one of
Because they
those
won't.
things. But you don't necessarily field good offense by having 5 guys always looking to score. You field good offense by having 5 good offensive players on the floor. And Fletcher Loyer's as good an offensive guard as Purdue's had, I think, in quite some time. It doesn't mean he's as good a scorer as your some of the guys Purdue's had. I think he's not far behind, but he's as good an offensive player in the backcourt as Purdue has had. That means passing, that means dribbling, that means decision making, things like that. And Purdue is not struggling to score. When Purdue does struggle to score, it's turning the ball over. Is he part of that problem? Yeah, once or twice every now and then. He had one yesterday that was probably more on Edey than it was on Loyer. He had one at Ohio State, but he's a really good player. And giving up on really good players because there's a 2 next to his name after a game in which he scored 92 points or 96 points when he had 5 assists, which means that's at least 10 points that he
Contributing to,
contributed in one way or another. That's not how this works. You want to put Miles Coleman out there instead? That's fine. But there's you're 24 and 4, whatever, or 24 and 3, whatever your record is right now, with who you're playing. And the whole notion of making wholesale changes right before the postseason is absurd. But it's the stir craziness of this time of year where every game, everybody wants to change the starting lineup. Every year, this guy's not scoring enough, so this guy shouldn't play as much. It's just got to have something to talk about at all times. This is not really a thing. I think that his time's going to come again. I think that's the cyclical nature of things. Remember, he didn't do anything against Alabama, and then he comes out the next game and gets 27 against Arizona. I think people who might be coming in mid-season here to celebrate whatever might happen for Purdue from here on out and talk, you know what, to their friends from IU at work. Maybe don't remember the Tennessee and Arizona games. And two games does not a season make, but he's no different a player now than he was then. He's not worn down. He's not any of that stuff. He is just not getting shots. And that is a compliment because when you watch the games, you see that no one is leaving him. He got one open look yesterday that was like a 30-footer. I think he might have got another one, two that he missed. But things have changed, and that's the nature of a long college basketball season, especially in the Big Ten when everybody knows what everybody's capable of doing. He'll be fine. I think the shots he got at Ohio State off the dribble were shots he can make. They're also reboundable misses that the analytics community would be very high on, and two of those misses were rebounded. One of them for a direct putback. Those are good plays for Purdue. It's just he didn't make the runners that he often makes. There's no issue here. This is just stir craziness late in a long season.
Yeah, I think that is well said, and we'll be dealing with that stir craziness until the tournament is over. If you're maybe before the tournament starts, but then once it gets started, that will continue as well, one would think. So, all right, Brian, safe travels to Michigan, and that will be we'll look for your excellent work on goldenblack.com for We apologize on the podcast version that our Rick Mount audio got messed up and lost. So if you want to watch hear what Rick Mount had to say, go to our YouTube version. Dave Schellhouse needs no introduction to Purdue fans. Of course, he is number two on the all-time list. Though Zach Edey is tromping down on you, and he's going to pass you, I think, as he will Rick if things go well for Purdue. But Dave, obviously an All-American, led the nation in scoring in 1966, All Big Ten multiple times, All-American multiple times, a first-round draft pick of the Chicago Bulls. And we're going to talk about his book as well. And the Shellhouse story just released relatively recently, a great book on his story, which is quite a journey. It had a lot to do with basketball, but also a lot to do with life. And I think if you're a Purdue fan or if you're want to know a great sports story, it's well worth picking up. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Dave, you were in Mackey Arena last night. Purdue has a 28-point win against the second best defensive team in the country in Rutgers. Pretty good rebound performance by Purdue against, again, a team that's usually pretty hard to score on. Purdue made easy work of that last night.
Well, they played really well last night. You know, they had, I think, Braden Smith's just playing tremendous right now. And that makes a lot of difference with that team. And of course, off the bench last night, Heidi, he made some tremendous athletic moves. So they came to play last night. I think they were a little upset after Sunday's loss.
It certainly was that way. That it certainly appeared that way. And Purdue seems to have a lot of weapons. You talk in your book, and again with the Shellhouse story, about playing with George Grahams, who was a 7-footer back in the day. I think might have been Purdue's first 7-footer of all time. Bill Jones was maybe a 6'11" back in the day. How would you have liked to played with Zach Edey? Would you?
Oh, it'd be tremendous. I mean, I tell people that ask me about Purdue, I've never seen a player improve like him over the period of time that he has been at Purdue. And it's really been quite amazing to watch him. He opens up the defense. He's someone that can always bail you out. If you miss a shot, he can either get the rebound or he. I like the fact he knocks it out some back sometimes, and the guards get it. And you know, he probably isn't credited with a rebound, but it's his doing that Purdue gets the ball back. So, he would be. I mean, he it's they're a whole different team when he's not in the game.
Yeah, no question. And yet it is a team with 10 or 11. I would even throw Brian Waddell in it. There's a lot of weapons, even Miles Coleman. It's hard to imagine a guy like with Miles' talent not really getting a lot of court time. But when he does get court time, he sure is entertaining. Hit that nice. Your jump shot was beautiful. He has a beautiful jump shot, doesn't he? I mean, he's just fun to watch.
Well, yeah, I mean, their depth and the recruiting that they've done in the last 4 or 5 years has really put Purdue on the national map. And that's been kind of fun.
All right, I think I can hold this up so we can see it. The Shell House Story is the name of the book. Again, available on Amazon, and we'll put a link on our site so that if you're interested in it. I love stories, and you've lived a few decades, as we both have, and you chose to tell your story. And it is a story about basketball and your basketball career and your life growing up in Evansville and all the things that you brought together from a basketball perspective, but then also kind of your experiences after in coaching, things that worked well in your life, things that didn't always go well, and challenges you had. But I love that part of it. You obviously talk about your bout with alcoholism and very candid about that, but very valuable. But what got you to decide, I'm going to work to put this thing together? I know you'd had some notes over the years and continued to accumulate thoughts, but what pushed you to the edge of going through the process of having a book?
Well, actually, during my life, there have been some things that have happened, and friends, family have always encouraged me to say, you ought to write a book. Well, I didn't know how to write a book. I mean, that was something beyond me. But I was fortunate to meet a couple of people that told me, basically how to do it. And I have say I found out I was an accidental saver. I have some scrapbooks, but not great, but pretty good. And I even have elementary school report cards. So it took me a little while to go through there, and it was healing in a lot of ways. I found a guy that many people in West Lafayette are familiar with, Tom Speaker, who's written a number of books. And what I would do was to record on tape, and then he would write and I would edit, and we would meet weekly. And it took us longer, or at least it took him longer than he thought it would, but we became good friends, and it was very healing in a way, to look back and remember many of the people that have helped me and the things that I experienced. So that's kind of what I did. I just sort of, tried to be as accurate as I could as far as when I played, who was the coach, the players I recruited. I loved coaching, and as you say, I'm actually in 2 days it'll be 39 years of sobriety. So it's been a long time, and it was the right time to tell my story, I think. I'm retired. I want to help as many people as I can with this book, especially young professionals that are going out in their career. And hopefully it's been receptive well, and hopefully people will enjoy it. A lot of great things about Purdue. I honestly feel that Purdue's basketball took a huge turn when they hired George King. Red Mackey hired George King going into my senior year, and ever since then, Purdue's been awfully strong at the Big Ten and national level.
Yeah, no question that was a turning point, and you had the opportunity to play in George's first year, and in year four, Purdue was in the Final Four under George King in 1968-69 with Rick Mount, Herman Gillen, Billy Keller, and others that made a big deal with that. I think the interesting thing about redemption and what obviously your situation at Indiana State, you worked your way at Morehead State and to in Minnesota to be able to get to that level and have that opportunity in Indiana State. And I don't want to have a spoiler to the story because it's a significant one, but it is you had to overcome some challenges. You had to overcome an extremely disappointing finish at Indiana State and find yourself back to kind of where you started from at Morehead State. But just talk now as you reflect back at that. What would be your message to people if you were talking to somebody across that wanted to be in coaching or in life about how to deal with real difficulty?
Well, this was where I went to Indiana State in 1982. And as you say, what I figured out early on in coaching, there's two ways to get ahead. Number one is get on someone's coattails. If you're an assistant for Bobby Knight or you're an assistant for Dean Smith, your chances of getting a head coaching job at the collegiate level are pretty good. Or you have to win. And I was one of those people that felt like I wasn't on anyone's foot tails. Is that the right word? But
Coattails, yeah, you got it.
yeah, coattails. Well, I was very successful at Morehead State the first time and had the opportunity. I know I interviewed a couple years, interviewed at Drake, I interviewed at Appalachian State. Bobby Crimmins got that job, and then he went on to Georgia Tech and Indiana State. And when I got to Indiana State, unfortunately, based on what I learned later, I was in a critical stage along with my alcoholism. In other words, if I'd have got sober earlier or had stopped earlier, my life may have been different. But it's what it does to you when you drink. It's not how often or whatever. But what happened was I was let go at Indiana State in 1985 and sent to treatment. Unfortunately, I had no anonymity. It was front page, all over the state of Indiana. And it was very difficult from that time on to the stigma at that time was very strong. I put in the book, and I'm pretty accurate. I applied for over 75 jobs and maybe got two interviews and wound up back at Morehead State, which turned out, in my estimation, to be a blessing, especially for my family. So, all of those things, what I tried to do once I got sober was to learn everything I could about alcoholism, and that's in the book. And if it can help, many of us are touched by this, whether it's family members, ourselves, our spouse, our friends, we all have stories, and if it can help someone recognize it, deal with it, that would be great for me.
Well, and I appreciate the fact that 39 years, and you say it's a day at a time, right? It doesn't.
One day at a time, I've met some wonderful people. It's well worth the effort. And, unfortunately, if someone doesn't get sober, it's not going to end well.
And I thought you were very candid about that, about your personal life, et cetera, and some of the challenges it meant for your family down the road. And yet, it is an interesting story, and certainly well articulated your opinion on that in terms of what that was about. Okay, I have to ask you now about you had a bobblehead last week for the Minnesota game, right? And
Yes.
A, what's it like to have a bobblehead? And two, B, what's it like to stand? You obviously been an educator your whole life. You've taught, but still, and you've taught and had to stand in front of teams. Students, et cetera. A little different standing in front of 14,000 people and composing yourself. But what was that like for you, that experience of A, the bobblehead, and B, standing up there at halftime and articulating a very coherent message?
Well, I think, a couple of things. Number one, Matt Painter's done a great job of including former players and managers back into the program. So I've been a season ticket holder for a number of years. And as those years went along, people say, "Well, when are they going to have a bobblehead night for you?" And I'd say, "Well, I have no idea." Well, this year they did, and it was a wonderful evening. I have three kids. I have a daughter who lives in Tampa, and a daughter and son that live in Salt Lake City, and all three of them came out. And if they had been to Mackey, it's been when they were very little children. So just going to Mackey's fun.
Oh, yeah.
And, people, it was interesting. Now, as far as I'm very grateful to Purdue for that. I mean, they're sort of cartoon characters anyway. I have a
Yeah.
lot
Oh,
of them,
yeah.
but people enjoy them and et cetera. And as far as speaking, I thought about it for a few days, what I wanted to say. I'm very fortunate, and I talk about it in the book, to have selected Purdue. It worked out great for me. Wonderful people helped me over my life just because of Purdue. My brother went there, all his kids. I mean, it's been a great university for all of the Shellhouse family. But anyway, I was a little nervous, but when I walked out there, I thought, I want to keep it short. I paid a tribute to the Evansville people. I feel like when I came here, the next year Bob Greasy came here, a lot of us had we both had success. And I know from coaching that once you get a player from an area and he's successful, you can get other athletes from that area. But I also wanted to, just let people know that we're in a very special time in Purdue basketball, and we should enjoy this. And, people get upset when we lose one game, but
Oh, yeah.
it's it, believe me, as you well know, it could be a lot worse.
It ties into someone that has dealt effectively with alcoholism. It's one day at a time, but you better enjoy the day, right? And if you don't enjoy Purdue basketball right now, or even where they are, you can't fix what's going to happen in March. We'll see what's going to happen in March. They got an opportunity in front of them, but if you don't enjoy what you're watching in Mackey Arena, especially after last night, you're not going to enjoy much.
Well, it's phenomenal when I go to a game and I look at the very top and every seat's taken.
Oh
I
yeah.
mean, it's just mind-boggling, really.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dave, the name of the book, The Shell House Story, and I've been looking back, Rise, Fall, Redemption, The Story of Purdue Legend Dave Shell House, written by Dave Shellhouse and Tom Speaker, as you mentioned, a friend of mine as well, great guy. And it really is, it's a story well worth reading, and the message is important. It's honest. You were very honest about Indiana State and some of the things that caused you to have to deal with, but very, very honest portrayal of what that's about. So we thank you so much for your time today, and we've always appreciate your view. We next time we'll talk about your 57-point game against Michigan back in tonight. It'd be helpful for Purdue on Sunday afternoon to have Dave Shellhouse throw in, or maybe be Zach Edey put up 57 against Michigan as you did back in 1966. But thanks so much, and we certainly have enjoyed our relationship over the years, and grateful for
Thank
that.
you, Alan. And I think that Purdue fans will, enjoy reading about people like Mel Garland and Bob
Yeah.
Kerkhizer and George King and Bob King, and they touched a lot of lives.
They certainly did, and you articulate that part very importantly. All right, we want to thank our sponsors, Triple X on the Hill, but on the level of Purdue tradition since 1929. Hilton, or excuse me, State Farm agent Trent Johnson at TrentIsMyAgent.com, as well. Good folks at WLFI, Gordon Jackson. Mary, I'm assuming I know that they're doing a great job to help us out. We appreciate that. We'll be back next week, leading into Purdue's game against Michigan State. I would assume a game that Dave will be there as well. But we'll talk a little bit of media. We'll talk. I think we're going to talk with David Neff from Purdue's Boilermaker Alliance. Dave, who would have thought we'd be talking about collectives in this world today? But college sports has changed, and Dave will join us, in addition to some other guests as well. So have a great week, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. And we'll look forward to next week and Golden Black Live, and also to all of you that have enjoy us on Saturday simulcast too. You get a chance to, if you missed part of this interview, you can check in there. Want to thank Brian Newbert, Rick Mount, Dave Shellhouse for joining us today. And of course, the good folks at the Union Club Hotel for sponsoring our Saturday simulcast. We'll be back next week with another compelling show, we hope, leading into that Purdue Michigan State basketball game. And we hope that you all have a great week. And we look forward to another edition of Saturday simulcast.